Hey guys, this week's episode is brought to you by the Any Selkie Companies. Their big cyber sale kicks off next week on November 25th, meaning you can get 25% off anything on their site. Rugs, furniture, gifts, anything. It's all 25% off and you can see it all at annieselkie.com/YHL.
I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Today we're confessing how we screwed up hiring out a project recently and sharing what we do differently next time. Also, why plants might not be the powerful air purifiers we were promised, and can our childhood really predict our future?
We have a long overdue story for you today.
It starts all the way at the beginning of the summer,
yes.
Basically. June, we're talking about?
I forget the exact month, but yes, it was pre-summer, and it's about the exterior of our home. You know, we've been working on some exterior updates, like we put up that awning we talked about, we changed the location of the lights, we even, if you saw on Instagram, we planted a new tree in our front yard. Like, lots has changed, but we have yet to share it all with you in like one post, which we're working on for this week. So
yes,
we'll all be in the post this week, knock on wood, everything works out.
Wide photos of the entire thing, because you'll remember in the show notes a few weeks back, we shared like a close photo of the awning with the lanterns moved down and the brick patched, but it wasn't painted yet. There was a lot going on. We were waiting for some grass to grow back that was disturbed from this project all the way back in June.
Yes, when we had our front path redone. And we haven't really talked about it at all, mostly because of timing. Like, it happened right before we left for Cape Charles for the summer. And so we didn't get a chance to take our pictures. And then by the time we were back, we were like, well, let's just wait for the awning. And then like all of our grass died at the end of the summer and just kind of looked ugly out there. And so I have lots of excuses, if you can tell.
Our curb appeal has 99 problems and dead grass is one.
Yes. Well, not at the moment. It's looking pretty lush right now. I mean, it's under a layer of fall leaves, but that'll look nice in the photos, hopefully. But let's tell you about the mistake we made when we were doing this project, the front path redo. Our old path was an aggregate path. If you guys have seen those, it's like a bunch of small pebbles fused together in concrete. It's what was here when we bought the house, and it's been fine, but we've never really loved it, I guess.
It hurts the feet.
Yeah. And Sherry has always dreamed of having a bluestone path. Like, bluestone is like kind of that big, oversized slate-looking stone.
Yes, and I learned, you guys, that it's one of the more affordable outdoor stones, which shocked me because it's my favorite. Like, I had to do some research, and slate, and I think it's called limestone?
I know the term. I don't know if that's what we're talking about.
Like, many other patios made from those darker stones are more expensive, and the bluestone is cheaper. And I love it. I mean, it's not free, but it's significantly cheaper than the other natural stones I looked at. And I love the way it looks. It's like a blue-gray, warm, interesting layered tone. No stone is the same as the next, but it's not super varied. So it generally feels like it will age really well with our house. It makes our house feel older and more kind of historic and stately.
Yeah, it's something we've wanted to do ever since we painted the house last fall. It felt like it needed that to sort of complete the front. So we did that back in, I think it was June. And like we said, we made a mistake in the process. We hired it out. It was not a project we did ourselves. We sort of treated ourselves to the new path. And as much as we've given advice for picking contractors and subcontractors, and we've worked with so many over the last few years, both here at our house and out in Cape Charles, we missed our own advice and we had a bad experience with this particular job. And I don't want to like call the person out because a lot of it is on us. It was just a poor fit between our personality and his. So I don't want to like put this on him and I don't want to like, you know, put his name out there or whatever. It's not about that. But we wanted to share what went wrong, why we think it went wrong, and what we would have done differently so that it is a reminder to all of us. I say all of us, including the two of us, because I think it was helpful for us to have this reminder as to what we should do next time.
Yes. There just were some hiccups throughout the project that I think if we had followed our own advice and like looked for recommendations through friends and family and talked to previous people who worked with this person, like got references, nothing is wrong with what it looks like. The path is lovely. It just was like snafus that during the project, we were like, oh my gosh, if we had just communicated better, like if he had talked to us more and maybe we had to have laid things out more with him, it was like a tale of woe from the beginning.
Yeah. I think the best two examples of problems that could have been avoided were one, the path was going to be a little bit larger than our existing path, and so it was coming close to some of the sprinkler heads I had installed when I did our lawn irrigation system a couple years ago. And so we said to him up front, like, these are where the heads are. If the hoses that go to them, because some of the hoses you can't see under the ground, if they're in the way, like, let us know. I can move it. I installed the system. Like, I know how to move it. He was like, no, we'll take care of it. It felt like it was something we had addressed. But then fast forward a few days later, they had literally laid the stone over one of the sprinkler heads. And we only discovered it because we saw, like, water bubbling up underneath this big piece of bluestone. And
I panicked.
Well, I don't think I panicked because I was like, well, we should tell him. And we did tell him and they fixed it. But it was like this hiccup that we were both sort of like, why did this happen? Like, it felt like something we had addressed and then it just got missed. And the other thing that went wrong that, again, was a communication issue was we also had our front steps widened as part of this. The steps on the front of our porch were like just centered and kind of like half the size of the porch, but we had them actually extend the brick so it was the full length of the porch and then top all of that with bluestone so that it's like a much more substantial front porch. And since they were adding new brick, that brick had to be painted to match the existing painted brick.
But lucky us, we have like a gallon left over of this masonry paint that we love. It's a flat finish. It's breathable, so it lets the brick breathe, so it would never like peel and crack. It has like a wonderful 30-year warranty. But we came home, like we drove up the driveway to see them painting our brick with latex paint.
Yeah, we had the paint on hand, but they went out and bought different paint, and it was not a perfect match, and it also didn't weather as well as the RemoBio paint that we have. And it was just kind of like, we were surprised they didn't ask us, but at the same time, I guess like we didn't make it clear to them that we had it. It just was something that never came up until it was too late. Again, it was not a huge deal, and it was something that we could solve because RemoBio also makes a primer that you can use so that if you have already painted brick that has been painted with latex paint, you can use their primer and then go over it with the masonry paint and still get some of the benefits of the masonry, and in our case, also get the color matching. So like weeks later after they had left, I finally had time to go out there and prime it and paint it again. So it was like extra work on my part that didn't need to happen had we just communicated up front.
Right. And it's completely on each side. It was a lack of communication because I wish I had said, I don't know why I didn't say, if I could rewind it, I wouldn't have him ask me. I would have told him. I guess I assumed he thought I had the paint because it was my house. So I was just surprised he like thought it was easier to go to the store and match it.
Yeah.
I don't actually think that's easier, but maybe he was trying to be nice. Maybe he's trying to go faster.
Yeah. And again, it came out just fine. It was just like we had different personalities or work styles, I guess. I think we're used to having like high involvement and high communication with our contractors. Like we work at home or we're on site at the beach house often so that like we can work through things and be consulted frequently along the way.
Yeah. And I think the people we work with routinely know that about us. They'll
yes.
call us upstairs when they're doing like our bathroom electrical and my electrician will say like, hey, this won't work because of where the beam is running in the attic. Do you want it on this side or that side? Like we are basically asked anytime something changes.
Yes.
But maybe that makes us nightmare clients for some people. Like I will fully own that some people's nightmare is over-involved homeowners.
Yes. And I think maybe that's what this guy was used to is that he thought the helpful work product was something where like we didn't have to think about it, where he could just plow ahead and deliver the final product at the end. And so I think we just had different expectations about our involvement, which is maybe why there wasn't as much communication besides like an end of day check-in type thing. But I did learn some things for next time we do this because I feel like we had gotten so comfortable with all the luck we'd been having with contractors out in Cape Charles and all the people we work with over the years that we got sort of lazy in our contractor evaluation steps.
Right, because I usually meet like 3 or 4 people. I get 3 or 4 estimates. The story of this is that a flyer came in the mailbox. I liked the picture on the flyer. I said to John, we've been meaning to do this forever. Let's have him come out. And if we like him, let's just go for it.
Yeah, I think we were convinced that it was a sign that this flyer had showed up and he was available. Like everything was aligning perfectly that we let our guard down a little bit on it.
And everyone listening, I know you've probably had the same thoughts sometimes where it's like, I know I should should get three estimates, but like this guy's here, I'm a busy person, I have a lot going on, and I get it. We've totally done it ourselves. Now we're back on the wagon. I will be getting like three or four estimates for new things. Obviously, we have a plumber and electrician we love. We use them over and over again. Every time they bid a job, I don't get other estimates.
Right, right, right. The other thing that I learned from it is that I would probably get more about the process in writing. Again, this one happened so quickly because he was available to start like the next day, and we took that as a sign that this was the right direction for us, that I think we didn't ask him to outline the project on paper, which would have maybe highlighted some of these moments, like about the paint, because if he had put paint on his budget breakdown, perhaps we would have seen that and been able to say, hey, we've got the paint, you can take that off your estimate. Like having things written down might eliminate some future problems. And again, we just didn't take the thorough step of doing that this time. So lesson learned. And again, we will have some pictures of it in the show notes, maybe just a couple preview ones. And then we'll be doing a full post about all of the outdoor changes, hopefully this week as well. So stay tuned on the blog for that. Okay, so I've got a quick update from actually last week.
It's snowing!
I know.
Did we know that was going
to
happen?
Yeah, it said it might turn to snow.
All I want is a picture of my house covered in snow. You guys know I love a white brick house covered in snow.
Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to stick, so I don't think that will be in the picture for the post this week.
Dang it. All right, anyway, back to business.
I've got a quick update from actually last week's episode. You know, Sherry was talking about that NASA study about indoor air quality and how it motivated her to put, what was it, one plant for every 100 square feet of house we have?
I had read that every 10 foot by 10 foot area in your house, so like 100 square foot space, one plant in there purifies, and obviously it brings boundless joy.
Especially if you're Sherry. And as I was linking to some of the articles about the NASA study in the show notes last week, I noticed one of them linked to the study itself, like the actual NASA paper. And, you know, curious mind that I am, I thought I should look at that to see, like, what did NASA actually say? Not that I have a scientific brain enough to actually understand it, but I did my best. And I had some takeaways that made me question it a bit. And I thought I would share them here. Not to question NASA. What? If you're listening, NASA.
Well, and there was another follow-up that kind of debunks everything.
I'll get to that. But first of all, the study that we keep referencing was done in 1989. So 30 years ago. There have not been like continuous studies or updates since. It was something that was 30 years old. Not that I'm suggesting plants and plant biology has changed a lot in three decades, but it sounded like the reason they did it at the time was because energy efficiency within buildings was getting so much better, and they were concerned that airflow within buildings, so buildings here on Earth, but as well as, you know, obviously the space shuttle as well, was not getting as much air circulation. And so we should start thinking about how we can purify the air in our homes, in our workspaces, and also in the space shuttle, I assume.
Because you're saying like filtration of HVAC was getting better and windows were more sealed. There weren't these like cracks that air filtered through from the outside. So the air inside of a building was much more locked in there and therefore worrisome if it was bad air.
Exactly. You know, they brought up concerns about like off-gassing and VOCs coming from the building materials we were using. And that's obviously something that we still think about today. And so they set up this experiment where they put these individual plants in these glass containers, like these sealed glass containers, pumped some of these gases into them, like formaldehyde and benzene and other things I don't really understand.
Oh, the plants are like, excuse me, could you please stop doing that?
Right. And then they measured how much of it was there after a period of time to see how much the plant had absorbed and how much the soil had absorbed. So that was like sort of how the test worked. And I was surprised to learn that, you know, this like list of the NASA recommended plants is not like they tested 50 plants and these were the best ones. The plants that keep popping up in these articles are the only plants they tested. So in some ways, I felt like their conclusion was really just like plants purify the air, not like these plants purify the air. These happen to be the ones they tested, but it didn't rule out every other plant out there.
Right.
And then the other thing that came up, and you referenced this like getting debunked, was that people now say, like there's been more studies about this that say that the conditions of the NASA study really don't map on to like real life conditions very well. And so we can't really trust their conclusions when we try to apply them in the real world.
Yeah, someone said, I think it was in a Domino article, but they were quoting this new study that said you'd need like 98 pothos in a 10 by 10 foot square or something like that. Don't quote me because I might be a little bit off on the dimensions or the number, but it was something so ridiculous. I don't even think Carmion could do that. Like, how do you get 98 plants in a small corner of your room. So stop saying they're good for the air and embrace them for the other thing they're wonderful for, which is like caring for something alive and the joy that brings you. It's like, you know, those studies that are like, if you have a partner, you might live longer.
Or a pet.
If you have a pet, you might live longer. Like living to take care of someone else or have that like sort of affection for something that you care for gives you purpose and reason and joy. And I believe that the plants have brought me so much of that.
Yeah.
I'm okay if they're not also working as little air purification systems. I mean, I loved thinking that they were worker bees behind the scenes doing that also, but it's not a deal breaker if they don't. And I want to tell you that there was one plant that gave me quite a scare. It was my huge pothos in the office, and I had been watering it, but it was kind of still looking droopy. Like even after I watered it, it was still flat looking.
It heard you on the episode brag about how well they were all doing. It was like, oh, I'll show you.
I was like, yeah, everything's doing fine. And then this pothos takes a dive. So I took a picture, texted it to Carmion. I was like, please help me. She said, take it down. It was on the top of a shelf in the office. Put it in the sink and flood it with water, but let the water all run out of it, like fully soak the soil. I think what you're doing is it's just watering the top of it, but it's such a big plant, it's not getting saturated enough.
Oh.
So I did that. It looked immediately better. It sprung up.
I even noticed this morning. I said, wow, look at your plant.
I fully revived it. And the amount of excitement that I have that I saved this plant is even deeper than the sadness when something dies. Like this revival of this plant has given me confidence that I guess I just feel like it's worth it even if they die every once in a while to have the like saving one feel so good.
Well, and not to end this update on a sour note, but I did want to like tie up the bow as to why they said the NASA study was not a perfect map to the real world. It's because they said those plants were tested in like ideal conditions where one, you have the air actually sealed in the box, and our homes are not like that. As energy efficient as homes are, this Domino article said that most homes exchange indoor and outdoor air like about once an hour. So like you are not trapping these bad things in here. Like you get more indoor air purification from swapping it with the outside air than you do from anything in your house.
Right. The plants don't work as hard as just natural air exchange that still continues to happen.
Exactly. They also said that in the test lab conditions, they were under bright lights that were helping the plants maximize their photosynthesis process. And I guess that's the process that actually does the air purification. And they said in most homes, your plants are not getting the ideal amount of light to maximize their photosynthesis process. So you can't really trust that they're churning through the air as well as those lab plants did.
Right. So to summarize, we'll put a link to this article if you want to read sort of the debunking newer studies that
I'll also link to the old NASA study because, guys, it looks like a straight up scan from the 1960s. It's like, you know, old black and white paper.
Okay. So those links will be in the show notes. And next, I want to talk about something. It's actually an article I read that's so interesting. It was in Reader's Digest, my very favorite grandma magazine. I am a grandma now. I am a subscriber to Reader's Digest, and it is one of my favorites. It's this tiny magazine. I had never read it growing up. Thought it was like for people in the waiting room who weren't me.
Is this where digging all of a sudden?
We did jump to me loving Reader's Digest. I can't love it enough. I'll put a link in the show notes to my subscription. I got it through Amazon. It's very affordable. It brings me so much happiness.
I feel like I should play the outro music. It sounds like the episode's over.
Sorry, it's a detour. John is very focused. He's like, get to the point.
We have an outline, Cherry.
Okay, so the point is, in this Reader's Digest article, it was called The Rule of Age 10, and it was a fascinating article. Well, John, summarize it. John's the fact person. I will talk for 20 minutes and not quite get to the meat of this.
We'll just detour back into why she loves Reader's Digest, I think.
I just really enjoy it.
Okay, so Sherry found this article. She had me read it, and also there's a link we can put to it in the show notes, but it's about this person who stumbled on this, what they call rule of age 10, that says if you look back at who you were between the ages of 9 and 11, it'll give you pretty good clues about what you should do as an adult. Like they were talking in the sense of career. I think the book they wrote was about people who make midlife career changes or have like a midlife career crisis. And they said, if you're having this like question about like, am I doing the right work? Like, is my life on track? You should look back to yourself at age 10 and say like, what did I find pleasure in then? Like, what activities made me happy? What did I want to be when I was 10? Because that might be a pretty good indicator of what will give you happiness as an adult.
Yeah, and I was like, well, what is it about age 10? Like, why is that the magic age?
Well, and the person points out, and I will quote this from the article, that age 10 is a developmental sweet spot. You're old enough to know what lights you up, yet not so old that adults have extinguished that fire by dumping more practical and quote-unquote realistic options on it.
Yeah, I wish I could go back and remember what I had said at 10 that I wanted to be, but I'm pretty certain it was a high school art teacher, because forever I wanted to teach art, and my dad was a high school math teacher my entire life growing up, and so I was like, high school's fun because they're like older and they have like really good skills by high school. Like, I didn't want to be doing like finger painting with children, right? You know?
You probably thought the high school kids were the cool kids because they were like older than you at the time.
Yeah. I remember in middle school, so it's a little bit older than 10, it would be 11, I met an art teacher who I still think of. I have a picture of her in my photo album. Like, I loved her. Her name's Mrs. Golubac. She had curly hair like Bob Ross, which I realized now looking back might be a requirement of high school art teachers because there were a lot. She was wonderful and I really loved her and looked up to her. So I could see at about that age or older, I really liked making things, creating things, teaching people how to make things. Like, that's what an art teacher is. It's like she would create some painting, but then she'd show us, look, I use tape to mask off the moon. So when you paint the night sky and then you peel the tape off, the moon is this perfect white circle of paper where the paint doesn't get. Like, you are demonstrating craftiness and creating something to a group.
Right.
So fast forward to being a blogger. And it's not that different, which is what was really funny when I started thinking about it. Because at first glance, I was like, no, this doesn't make sense for me. It doesn't work for me.
Right.
Because I'm not a high school art teacher.
Yeah, you're not an art teacher. So therefore, this is a bunk theory.
Right.
I had trouble when I read this. Like, I can't really bring myself back to age 10 very specifically. Like, I don't know what I was doing at that time or what my like clear passion was. Like, I was on a soccer team, but like, I don't really play soccer now, nor do I want to be on a soccer team now. I had a paper route, I guess. Like, I had trouble at first. And by the way, in the article, they suggest if you do have trouble thinking, you should look back at old journals, yearbooks, maybe call old friends from that time. Those are some ways to jog your memory if you really want to go deep into this exercise. I didn't need to go that deep in this exercise because I quickly remembered, at least very superficially, in elementary school, if someone ever asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, I listed one of three things, or all of three things, which was an artist, an author, or a teacher. And I think, just like you were describing, I kind of do some version of all of those things right now. Like, I'm not an artist, but we do a lot of creative ventures, like home design.
You build things. Yeah. You create things with wood, and we do things with paint and with trim.
Well, and even like, you know, my bootleg graphic design that I do on the computer for like presentations for, you know, my consulting jobs or graphics for the blog. Like, there are enough artistic, quote unquote, things that I do that I think it checks that box for me.
Right.
And then I think, well, I mean, yes, I am an author, probably not in the way that I pictured as a kid, but like, there are books out there with my name on them. So I like check that box, and I author as in terms of like write blog posts every week.
Yeah.
And then I think, yeah, the teaching thing, like you were talking about for being an art teacher. Again, I'm not literally a teacher, but a lot of what we do is conveying the information to people and helping people. And I guess teaching in a way, to use
tutorials.
That
yeah, yeah. John loves a super detailed tutorial in a way that hardly anyone who writes on the internet does. Like, John loves so many details, so many photos, parenthetical notes for people so that they can do something really thoroughly. He'll cover things that not everybody does, like how to deal with a baseboard or a corner. So I feel like we both like to address issues or maybe solve things. And so working through building tutorials or consulting in advertising or even house staging, I feel like we're like working with other people to help solve problems.
Yeah. So I think for us going through this just thought process based on this article was just sort of like reaffirming maybe that we're doing the right things with our time these days as an adult.
Well, the funny thing, can I tell you this funny thing about my mom? So the other day I said to her, our daughter's really into Calvin and Hobbes books. I had every single one growing up. I was lamenting to her that I was so sad we didn't still have them because at some point when I was younger, I didn't keep everything, obviously, and my mom helped me pare stuff down, so we probably donated them to a library or something. And I was saying, I wish we had just kept everything because she's so into some of the things that I was into and it would be so meaningful. And my mom said to me, Sherry, don't you remember you were redoing your room every month? It's no surprise to her that I ended up in interior design, like in home renovation and design.
But it's a surprise to you.
It's a huge surprise to me because I define myself more as an artist and a painter, and I'd make like collages and paper mache 3D objects and ceramics. So home was such a small part of it to me because I did art in all the aspects, like anything I could decorate, I decorate it. So I decorate my room, but I decorate a piece of paper and I decorate a ceramic pot. I think to me, it was never obvious that it was going to be house at all. But my mom was like, Sherry, oh my gosh, every 30 days you'd be like, I'm repainting my trim. No one come in my room. And I don't remember that distinctly. So I do think it's a good point in the article to ask people around you, maybe ask your parents.
Oh yeah, that's a good idea.
Because I think other people might have more of a global view. And my mom was like, yeah, you were always doing artsy things, but you were doing so much with your room. I knew you liked furniture layouts, rearranging things, like reorganizing the way you displayed things was fun for you.
Are you talking about your animal hammock for all your stuffed animals?
It's called a pet net, guys.
Excuse me.
I loved it. It hangs in the corner. You put all your stuffed animals in it. I thought it was a brilliant invention. And then I decorated it. Like I literally was looking back at pictures and I had like pieces of tinsel, probably from a Christmas tree that I taped to make like pom-poms and in the corners. I like embellished the pet net with tassels, which spoiler alert, I still freaking love tassels.
I, like you, am very surprised that my life steered into like rooms and interiors and homes. But when I try to figure out where that thread came from, I think everyone to some degree liked making their space their own. Like when they were growing up, like the first time you had like a room your parents let you decorate or have some choices in, like that was exciting. So I don't think that's super unique to just you and I or people that later end up loving home design. But the thing that I was thinking about, this is in college, so I was like more like 20 than I was 10. But the first apartment I had that like wasn't a dorm, and so I could do a bit more with, I took a lot of time decorating a radiator cover. I don't think I've ever told you this.
No. What do you mean decorating? Is this puppy
paint? Oh, just
paint?
You wait. There was math involved.
Oh, no.
So I just said, you know, a radiator, and I put just a wood shelf over it, right on top of it. Who knows if that was safe, but that was none of my concern when I was 20 years old. And I painted it white, and then I, in pencil, mapped out a grid on the top of it, and I assigned a different color.
Of course you did.
To each number on a dice, and then
I was just getting nerdier.
And then I rolled a die to determine what color each square would be, so it'd be a randomized pattern. And I thought it was a way of like math coming to life in my room.
Oh my gosh.
I think the colors were black, white, and shades of blue.
Which we still decorate with today.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't use dice though. There will be no mapping of grids in any design ever for me. I am a go with the flow kind of person.
I just earned some, hopefully, street cred with the math geeks listening.
I don't know. Or they're all like, I'm really nerdy, but even I didn't do that.
Yeah, they're like, you're giving us a bad name. Shut up, John. But anyways, I just thought it was an interesting exercise for us both to go through, not only to reminisce, but also because it was somewhat like encouraging that like we're on the right path. Not that I was really like doubting that at the moment, but you know, there's always times you're like, is there something else I should be doing with my life? But I think like what they said in the article, if you are someone who's in a moment where you are feeling like off track with your life or your career, that maybe this is a way to sort of find some new places to start. Like if you can unlock something that you love doing when you were 10 or sometime when you were younger, then maybe that might give you an idea. Anyways, we will put the link to this in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast if you want to read the article and dive more into it. I think there's also a full book that goes into a bit more, so I'll link that as well. And if we can dig up some old pictures,
oh my gosh,
we should
put
those in.
Your brain will explode when you see my room because literally it would be like the trim color and then a picture taken a month later and the trim color is different. I am amazed because my mom is a pretty strict Italian mom, but she let me go pretty crazy in my room and it encourages me to let our kids do the same thing because I like where I ended up. I like that I had all that experimentation and I even like that she noticed it. So maybe she was fostering that in me by giving me that creativity because she thought in her head, like she does this so often, maybe this will be what she does when she grows up. She never communicated that to me when I was young, but I'm so grateful I was kind of given that extra mile because our house downstairs was a showroom.
Yeah.
So it was really cool that I got to make my room super crazy and it was my space to do that in. So it also reignites that commitment in myself to, even if it's not what I would pick for our daughter's room, she's getting old enough where she can make her decisions, she can rearrange it.
I'm going to put this sound bite on like a little MP3 for her to play back to you in a few years.
When she wants to paint the whole thing black, I'll have to breathe deeply.
She'll be like, Mom, on podcast episode 155. And if I can dig up a picture of my college dorm with my math painted radiator cover.
I've never seen it, so I feel like I need to understand you more.
You know, it's probably in some pictures, but not in much detail.
I do remember you showing me that you took a panoramic shot of your room, but it really was just taping like five pictures together to piece together a shot of the room.
Even in college, I was into documenting my spaces.
It's so true. Yeah, more than me. You guys know the stories that John wanted to start the blog. John has loved documenting even more than me. It's why his tutorials go even deeper than mine do.
Okay, next up, we're getting into, it is not Reader's Digest. Sherry's digging another thing in addition to Reader's Digest.
Right. I always dig Reader's Digest, but this is another thing that is super entertaining and you guys might enjoy listening to pass the time.
Hint, it's a podcast.
But first, we have to take a quick break.
AnySelke has been a longtime sponsor of our podcast, but pay special attention this week because they're giving us all a heads up that starting next week, everything on their site will be 25% off.
Yes, their cyber sale starts on November 25th and it covers their entire site, so it's a perfect time to snag a big ticket item if you've been hunting for something like a sectional, a coffee table, a headboard, a huge rug, maybe a whole new set of bedding for your bedroom. Again, every single thing on AnySelke's website is going to be 25% off starting next week all the way through December 6th.
And if you don't need big items, there are plenty of gifty type stuff up there that you may not even realize Annie sells.
Yeah, I think we've talked about their robes and PJs before. They've also got jewelry and tote bags. There's holiday decorations, stuffed animals. They even just launched a whole new line of pet stuff that includes things like leashes and collars and these cute little dog beds with removable covers, very smart, that are easy to wash.
It's like Annie is combining her love of bedding and dogs to make sure everyone's dogs are sleeping well too. And again, it's all 25% off starting next week on November 25th. Just go to AnnieSelke.com/YHL to check it out. That's AnnieSelke.com/YHL.
The sale runs through December 6th, and after that, you can still use the code YHL15 to get 15% off. But you know, 25 is even better. Just saying.
Before Sherry dives into the podcast she's digging this week, I'm going to go first because I'm digging yet another helpful tool that has really come in handy during the bathroom renovation. So, you know, last week I dug that impact driver that I bought specifically for this renovation in the bathroom. But the thing I'm digging today is something I haven't used in a while, but I rediscovered why it's so useful. And it is a chalk line. I don't know if you guys have used this before or heard of them before, but it's something I wasn't really aware of or wasn't on my DIY radar for a long time because I didn't really understand why they were useful. So I'm going to describe what it is first so you will understand why it comes in handy, especially in a project like the bathroom we're doing. So the chalk line is like $6 or $7 and it's this small kind of diamond shaped cartridge typically. And inside the cartridge is a long string. Most of them are 100 feet long and it's kind of like a fuzzy string, like a
not, it's like yarn almost.
Yeah, like a really fuzzy yarn, because inside the cartridge, and the reason why it's all wound up in the cartridge is the cartridge is full of like powdered chalk. And so what you can do is you can pull this string out, the chalk line out of the cartridge, and stretch it across an area that you need to mark a straight line on. One end of the string has like a metal hook that you can hook onto the end of like a piece of flooring or a piece of plywood or drywall or like oversized things that you are cutting or needing to mark. And so you hook one end of the string over wherever your line needs to start, and then you pull the line taut to the other end. So again, in the example of a piece of drywall, let's say you have a 4 foot by 8 foot full piece of drywall and you need to cut a foot off of it. So you need to be like only 3 foot wide. So you measure in 1 foot from one end, 1 foot from the other end, but you know, it's 8 feet apart. Like you're not going to be able to use a yardstick to mark your line.
Right. A yardstick wouldn't span from dot to dot in the way that this string would span from dot to dot. And then guys, you literally pluck the string with your finger, pull it up and snap it down. It makes a clean, perfect chalk line between those two dots. And then you just cut along that chalk line. It also came super in handy for the floors because we had little joists we were trying to screw into. So we marked all the areas where we would hit those and we were able to screw in our new subfloor in the right spot. So it held really well going into the wood because we just used that chalk line and snapped it and made little lines on the floor to follow.
Yeah, it's an easy way to mark straight lines on big pieces of material. And because it's chalk, you can just dust it off or wipe it off if you need to later. Like it's not a permanent magic marker or Sharpie mark on anything either. That's the other advantage to it.
I also like saying I have a chalk line because it sounds like you sell a line of chalk. Right.
You might be interested in checking out my chalk line. We have sidewalk chalk, blackboard chalk.
And you know how John picked the colors. He rolled a dice.
It's true. Anyways, you are digging a podcast, my dear.
I'm digging a podcast, you guys. Our friends, Elsie and Emma of A Beautiful Mess, started a podcast. I was so excited when I heard the podcast was coming. We actually did a podcast e-course with them years ago. And when we were putting
year ago.
Well, when we were putting that together, they were like, we would like to do one eventually. And so I've been anticipating this with such excitement, and it has finally come true. I think they have 3 episodes out.
Yeah, probably their 4th will launch the same day that people are listening to this one, because I think theirs comes out on Mondays also.
Okay, so we listened to the first episode in the car driving to the beach house, and I just was struck with exactly what we heard when we started a podcast. Like, we heard from so many people who were like, after listening to 3 of your podcasts, I know you better than reading your posts for 3 years. Like, a podcast just, you get people's humor and inflections, you get the dynamic between the two people, you learn weird, random things about them that you don't really think matter, but later you find yourself thinking about it, and we find that too. Like, we'll reference something on the podcast in a throwaway line, and you guys will all latch onto it and be like, wait, you have a lice spray? You spray your kid's hair with lice spray? It's like, yeah. Oh, that was a throwaway sentence.
The number of DMs you got about egg balancing.
Oh, everyone went crazy on the egg
balancing. I got an email from a college friend about it. Like, you never know. And I felt after listening to 3 episodes of their podcast, like I knew them better. Like I was better friends with them, even though like it was a one-way conversation. Yeah. But like I got to hear their quirks more. I got to hear the relationship between Elsie and Emma better. You know, they're sisters, but like they don't live in the same city. So they're often not like Instagramming together and stuff like that. So I just felt like I was more connected to them than I have been even after working with them closely on this e-course. Like we've known them electronically, like through email and DMs, but like I felt closer to them through this.
Yeah, it was like a richer picture is painted. And that's why we wanted to do it. We were like, don't you ever just want to not type everything out and you just want to sit and tell someone a story? And so I think even listening to their podcast reignites the love I have for podcasting in general.
Yeah.
Because it is such a fun medium to just get to sit down and tell you guys embarrassing stories or lessons learned or own something dumb that we did. Like it's just a way to share, I guess, a different facet or like a deeper picture than just a photograph and a paragraph, which doesn't have any like intonation or depth. Yeah. Or sarcasm. Like when I wrote a post, I'd always have to be like, I'm kidding, guys.
Right.
And on a podcast, I don't have to say that. I just laugh.
Well, and to speak specifically about their podcast, because I feel like we've just talked about why we like podcasting so much.
Go figure. 2 podcast nerds talking about podcasting. Right.
I think if you are already a fan of A Beautiful Mess and the work they put out, you'll love having this other avenue to connect to Elsie and Emma. But I also think if you're someone who enjoys home and design and creativity and just all the random stuff we talk about here, it's just another set of perspectives on those sorts of topics. I think Emma says that she likes podcasts because sometimes it just feels like sitting down and having lunch with friends. And I feel that's like exactly what their podcast feels like as well. So if that's something that you're looking to add or get more of in your own like podcast listening queue, I would totally add the Beautiful Mess podcast to it.
Thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast. And for subscribing if you guys like it.
Yes, subscribing helps us so much. So if you haven't officially subscribed, it's the easiest way to make sure new episodes show up in your phone automatically every Monday. It doesn't cost you a single cent and only takes a few seconds to do.
Let's get official, guys. Click subscribe.
Will you marry me?
And keep telling us what you do while you listen. Like Tara, who left us a voicemail to say that she listens on her weekly hike up San Diego's tallest mountain.
I believe that's Mount Ron Burgundy.
If you want to see some pictures, links, or more info about the topics we covered today, hit up younghouselove.com/podcast for this week's show notes.
Yep, we'll have stuff like the link to that fascinating Rule of Age 10 article and the NASA study and a sneak peek of the new front path.
Ooh.
Later.
Bye.
And because it's chalk, you can just dust it off or wipe it off if you need to later. Like it's not a permanent magic marker or Sharpie mark on anything either. That's the other advantage to it.
You know what you can do?
What?
You can dust it off and try again. Dust yourself off and try again.
I want a Leah throwback.
At first you don't succeed.
I wouldn't call this an impression.
This entire song applies.